This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 18, Spodumene. Shame is an excellent teacher. The embarrassment is the mind's way of committing mistakes to memory. The Queen's Arm, alienating the Cavalli to begin with, grappling with the cyborg as the storm that brought them here approached. Undine's soul ached with the shame of these memories. Oi! Undine shifted the weight of the metal man against her shoulders to better support him. You need to stop moving so much. His head continued to loll lazily as he drifted in and out of fits of consciousness. They followed their guide down a set of steep, winding stairs that were cut into the wall of an underground cavern, and Vel's random acts of squirming to escape had threatened them both. Perhaps she deserved to fall after the pain she had caused. The air, thick with moisture, caused a thin layer of algae to coat the already precarious path, and one wrong move, one misplaced step, would send her and the cyborg tumbling out of sight. But at least Pyro would be better off without her, right? No. As they neared the last of the stairs that led out onto a stone platform, Undine clenched her jaw. That was a trap of shame. Left unchecked, it would lead to self-pity. It served nothing but self-indulgence, a useless emotion that was undeserving of her energy. She could not allow herself to wallow in shame, even if it was meant to force a confrontation with past events, a tool to help improve future choices. When she had first come to Ebra, she had served Zelfir loyally, a man of infinite patience, brilliance, and deserving of respect. She had obeyed his every command. And when he died, she had turned her duty towards his son, serving Elias in the same manner. She may not have agreed with his course of action, the bitterness that grew within him, but she had always obeyed his every direction. So then why had she not done the same for Pyra? Their Cavalli guide held his torch high, and Undine could see they had reached an underground lake, an opening in a massive access tunnel that ran through the ancient aquifers that lay forgotten beneath the desert. Carved by millennia of water erosion, the limestone bore the scars of drought and flood. Stalactites hung low from the ceiling. New layers were added, one drop at a time, until some were so large she had to duck in order to avoid catching her horns on them. Four large hollowed-out tree trunks had been tethered at the edge of the stone steps. Each one had a serpent head prow and were intricately carved with swirling patterns and depictions of heroic four-armed figures fighting off the large snake. Two of the boats had been layered high with large sheets of gold, which she quickly realized were the molted skins of those massive beetles that guarded the heart of the camp. If it truly was the precious metal, each craft carried a small fortune. The Cavalli lowered himself into the first dugout before pointing his torch at the second.
Tall one.
He used one of his extra arms to grab his own oar and demonstrated in the air what he wanted her to do, obviously not as well versed in their language as his elders. He pointed first to his own boat.
Small one.
Then to the other.
Small one.
They were to travel two by two, with Undine rowing the second craft. It made sense, she thought, as she was the only other capable one at the moment. Instinctively, she had stepped forward to place Vel in the boat with the Cavalli, but stopped. Even if this was strategical and the safest option, she must allow the Queen to speak for herself. She looked down at the Selkie woman. Who will you join? Your Majesty. Pyra turned to the Cavalli. I would not wish to impose on him with a fevered passenger. She bowed before taking the outstretched hand of their guide, nodding her thanks as she sat down on the hewn seat behind him. She looked up at the Dryad. If anything were to happen to him, you would be the only one able or willing to assist, and we can't return to the tower without Eric's brother. Her jaw tensed, but Undine relaxed as she came to an understanding. While the last part had simply been added in to make her feel less like she was being avoided, it was the wisest choice. It may put Pyra in potential danger outside her reach, but it also positioned her to speak with their escort. A rare opportunity, but one that might benefit them all. She carefully loaded the cyborg into the front of her own vessel before climbing in behind him and retrieving the finely carved oar. After releasing their mooring tethers, the boats were persuaded into action, and they set off. They each pulled along one of the laden canoes by a short rope. Her oar dipped into the water with silence as Undine kept her gaze trained on Pyra. She had been given her duty, her sacred charge, to protect those of the Folkgrave line by the Wild Queen herself. A task, Undine thought, she had risen to beautifully. But maybe she had done so with too much fervor, taken that order too faithfully. She looked up to see Pyra was still nursing her injured arm and avoiding her glances. Perhaps it was time for the Ironbreaker to step down from her role as protector. This would mean breaking her oath to the Wild Queen, an act so severe the consequences would be swift. But the only way to keep someone truly safe was to take away their choice, and no one wants to spend their life in a cage. It may not be the wisest decision, but Undine would let Pyra take command. For better or worse, she had proven herself time and time again. She was not a gentle trophy for some king to put out on display, and was just as much an accomplished ruler as her husband. She only hoped that their first choice hadn't been to lead them into a trap. In front of her, Vel reached a hand out to the queen and tried to crawl towards her. Undine smiled a little as she rested her hand on his back. Relax. She will be all right. His skin burned hot beneath her touch, yet he appeared to have regained a bit of his strength. She hoped this was a good sign. She may not have liked him, but he was loyal, and, truth be told, smitten with Pyra in his delirious state. Ahead, their guide said a few words of Kivalean before plunging the torch into the water, drowning them in absolute darkness. Undine's heart plunged into her toes as her fingers tightened around the wooden oar before thrusting it into the water. Your Majesty! She knew roughly how far ahead of them the other boat was, but she had no chance of reaching them in this darkness in time to save her. All is fine, Undine. He merely wanted to show us something. Fighting her impulses, she forced herself to obey. The canoe coasted through the void, the noise of her sudden splashing fading behind them and leaving them alone only with the constant dripping of water from the ceiling. Undine's eyes had just adjusted to the dark when she could see them again, an outline of their boat not far from her own, a silhouette cast in gentle pinpricks of orange light. She glanced about to see thousands of delicate strands of silk swaying on the calm breeze of their passing. She held back a gasp as she made out the wriggling movements of glowworms as they went about their business, unaware of the trespass. In front of her, Vel was reaching for the ceiling, his hand grasping as if trying to catch a star out of the subterranean sky. She smiled, but something blue flashed beside them in the water, and Undine spun round to look into the deep. A swarm of tiny, glowing blue jellyfish pulsed as they were ushered along by the gentle wake of their boat. She watched their hypnotic lights, losing herself for a long while in the kaleidoscopic display. She blinked, shaking her head as she reoriented herself. Looking forward, she spotted the Cavalli's vessel moving further away, and at the bow of her own ship, Vel was leaning over the edge, his arms fully submerged in the water. "What are you?" He smiled wider than he had in a lifetime. He knew these lights. They were the blue lanterns he had installed in the greenhouse back home. They had been a surprise, making that stupid face smile so bright once upon a time. If only he could reach one, maybe he could go back there. "Doing?" Undine lunged, but it was too late. With a splash, Vel fell free from the boat. "Yeah, that's a dragon." Piper's hand moved up to her mouth, unsure what to make of it. A massive, gleaming body covered in thick plants was charging back and forth along the rolling hills, shouting its fury to the sky with a feral screech. It would dig its claws into the earth, causing dirt to explode into the air before belching out a stream of fire, then running to the other end of the small valley to do the same thing again. Evan shot an accusatory look at Varen.
"I thought you said dragons were extinct!"
Varen, just as wide-eyed and flabbergasted as the others, shrugged and signed,
"They're supposed to be!"
Piper turned to the lichen.
"This is your fault, isn't it? I bet a world with werewolves has dragons all over the place."
Scratching beneath his bun, Winter pulled a face as their eyes met.
"Not outside of the movies, nah. About the closest thing we have are these giant lizards called Komodo dragons. Although some of the fringier scientists think that dinosaurs were actually..."
"Stop!"
Piper held up a hand.
"I'm sorry I asked."
"Sir?"
Unit 2 used its hand to shade its tiny eyes, squinting with mechanical eyelids to get a better look.
"I do believe that may be Percival."
Atticus, who had already been wide-eyed in amazement, perked up even more. He took in a deep, overdramatic gasp.
"You're right! That is Percival!"
"He's your brother. You can't be mad at him," Piper told herself. She folded her arms across her chest, but as the dragon took notice of a flock of fleeing animals and gave chase, she could feel her temper rising.
"Atticus, how do you know that thing's name?"
"What, Percy?" Atticus gave a nonchalant shrug. "Chester had me build him a few months back." She had thought something was off with the creature, and, looking closer, she could see it now. Its body was disjointed and mechanical. It had rusty scales, and its jagged spines ended in pitchforks? Piper could even see wheels and gears turning as it belted out another soul-rattling roar. Frederick, finally able to pull himself from his terrified position on the ground, waggled a fat, shaky finger at the boy.
"You made this monster!"
Atticus nodded, his floppy hat bouncing on his head.
"Well, yeah. Chester came to me and asked me to help him solve a problem he was having. See, the fields were taking too long to plow and harvest on account they were so large, and since the air up there is so thin, he was worried that the workers would pass out doing it by hand."
He looked over his shoulder, watching the dragon belch out a spray of fire, and he laughed.
"So I helped him design a combination tractor, or combine for short. My new favorite word, by the way, combine. It's like a word combine, but they pronounce it all funny for some reason."
"Stop rambling."
Piper put a hand on her brother's shoulder.
"Why does it look like a dragon?"
"Well, I had just finished reading book 3, where the Golden Knights unveiled their plot to defeat the Dragon Queen, when the idea struck me." Zegori the Devourer could tear up whole swaths of land with a single swipe. And I was like, wow! And realized that a dragon would make the perfect combine. Plow, reap, thresh, you name it, and Percival can do it. The smile faded from Atticus's face as his gaze landed on his shoes. But Chester didn't think it was fair to keep such a majestic creature contained, and he had me set Percy loose in the wilds outside Avis. Evan waved both hands wildly at the creature. Why did you make it breathe fire? Because he's a dragon, of course. What kind of dragon doesn't breathe fire? Atticus chuckled, shaking his head. I also programmed him to gently terrorize the livestock, hoard shiny things in caves, and to think that scarecrows were knights. I just wanted to see him fight one. Didn't last long, but it was interesting. A distant scream echoed across the small valley, and they all looked up in time to see a well-dressed man fleeing as Percival chased him down. The mighty dragon combine plucked the gentleman up in its mouth and trotted over to a small cave between several large rocks. It unceremoniously chucked the poor man into the hole and went back about his business of tilling the countryside. Frederick shivered.
That's where it was keeping all the others. After it trampled all of our supplies, it packed us all in there like a tin of caviar, just waiting until it gets hungry. I barely managed to escape.
Varen glanced over at their finely dressed, if mud-spattered, companion. His rich silk shirt was fastened with golden buttons, his cufflinks embedded with rubies that matched the deep red of his waistcoat, and the watch that dangled loosely from the pocket was gold as well, with silver inlays swirling around emeralds set into its surface. He hadn't seen one since Elias had showed off his back in their youth. Rolling his eyes with a sigh, Varen pulled out the book the boy had loaned him and flipped through the pages. Atticus frowned.
It looks like he's stuck in rampage mode, which is weird because Chester made me disable it before we could let Percy go. I think I know what's going on here.
Winter stroked the ends of his beard hair, lost in thought.
I watched this TED Talk last year about the emergent properties of machine learning. See, we can feed all sorts of data into a learning model, but the way in which the program chooses to express said information can have unpredictable outcomes.
Maybe.
Piper gave him a sidelong glance.
Or it could be the giant piece of debris stuck in its head.
Winter looked closer. Sure enough, there was a tree branch as thick as his leg shoved straight through the dragon's cranium.
Yeah, or that.
Oh!
Atticus hopped up and down.
Unit 2, do you still have the schematics for Percival? I just have to rewire the circuitry and flip a switch, and Percival will go back to being his usual sweet self.
Absolutely not.
Piper crossed her arms.
I wouldn't let you climb across a chasm. What makes you think I'd let you climb onto the back of a rampaging machine? I don't care how sweet it normally is.
Growing up with only books for friends, Varen had already finished nearly half of Moonlight Madness, the Dragon Quest Chronicles Book 3, during their walk here. Speed reading was a skill his mother taught him, a way to save precious time when dealing with the tedious paperwork inherent with ruling a country. But it only ever served one purpose for him, skimming past the lurid scenes of romance novels. Turning page after page, he found what he had been looking for. The scene where the Golden Knights set a trap for Zegori the Devourer, Queen of the Dragons. He ran his finger over several paragraphs, scanning the text to refresh his memory. He snapped the book shut and shoved it back into his bag, fishing out the slate and chalk instead. While he could communicate more effectively now with sign language, he also knew his mentor had a habit of oversimplifying his words. He tapped out a message and pushed his way to the front of the group, holding it up. I have a plan. Oh, what sweet relief. The cool waters of the cenote pressed against Vel's burning skin from all sides, leeching away the fire beneath the surface. But his mind still felt like a melting wax candle. Through the haze, he could feel his weightlessness, but the bubbles that escaped his mouth did not bring about the panic of drowning. Either he was already dead, or his mind was too far gone for him to realize he was sucking water into his lungs. His eyes scanned around, but he could pull nothing from the darkness save for the slow movements of the blue jellyfish, their long tendrils pulsing with gentle light. As he sank through them, their flashing display began to play tricks with his fevered mind. He forced his eyes shut and slammed his mechanical hand over them to block out the warbled visions they brought. But he could still see them. Why wouldn't they stop? Just as the question had entered his mind, the world around him snapped to black. He opened his eyes, peering between his fingers. Nothing. Maybe he was dead. Mel's feet gently crunched into solid ground, and he looked down. A useless reaction, as there was nothing but darkness pressing in on him. But the void was apparently not endless. He could feel loose gravel shift and move under his boots as he hopped experimentally, his denser-than-average body keeping him from floating back towards the surface. And then, out of the darkness, a massive orb clicked on like a light bulb. It was the same blue as the jellies, and he nearly brushed it off as one, but as the owner of that light began to swim closer, he realized it was an eye. A single eye in the head of a massive catfish, its other an empty socket. Vel's jaw dropped, releasing a large bubble of air. It could swallow him whole and still have room for two or three more humans his size.
"Are you a god?"
The words floated along the bubbles of water around him like an eerie siren song. They filled his ears, his mind, and the space between with a haunting dread, and Vel could feel himself tense up. He wanted to flee, to kick and pull his way back to the surface, but his body was too heavy and his brain too foggy. When he didn't answer, the giant fish swam closer, the glowing orb never moving from him. Several of the long, whisker-like barbels moved forward and brushed against his body. But as it touched his skin, Vel realized he wasn't staring at a single fish, but a massive school of tiny mollies, tetras, and gobies all swimming together to form the body of this talking monster.
"You smell like a god, but I wonder, would you taste like one?"
A shiver traveled up his spine, making it difficult for Vel to think. Was the water real? Was he really drowning? Was there even a fish? The ground beneath his feet shifted, and he looked down, that shiver rushing to his fingertips. It wasn't gravel, but bones. He pressed his palms into his eyes and shook his head violently, struggling to wake himself from this dream. The catfish bristled, its amalgam body losing cohesion for only a moment.
"Why aren't you answering me? Am I speaking your tongue?"
Vel kept his hand shoved against his eyes as the siren song that punctuated the silence shifted from something he understood to a series of terrifying noises.
"Amy?"
"So you can understand me. But what is wrong with you?"
Another barbel whipped out and brushed against his forehead.
"Ah, I see."
The catfish swam closer, bathing the tiny man with the light from its eye. Giving in to his impulse, Vel lowered his hands. He barely had a moment to register the creature was nearly touching his face before the orb flashed a brilliant, impossible blue. And as it hit his eyes, he could feel a cool tingle seep back through his skull like ice. In a flash, reality snapped back into sharp focus, and for a second he felt elation at being free from his fever dreams, only to realize he had awoken inside a nightmare.
"You're real, aren't you?"
His words traveled from his mouth, carried aloft in the expanse encased in a bubble.
"Yes and no. I ask again, are you a god?"
For a split second, Vel considered lying, but he had a feeling the fish might be able to read his intent.
"No."
It swam closer, inspecting him from one side, then the other.
"Not a god, but not a man. Are you broken?"
Vel narrowed his gaze, flexing his mechanical hand. But the feeling was off, weak. He glanced internally at his heads-up display. Amy was still bringing systems back online, the words "safe mode" flashing in the corner. He was only at 18% restored motor functionality. He had just begun to consider what this meant when the cooling sensation in his brain receded, and he could feel the heat creeping back in. Vel blinked several times, but his eyes glazed over and the confusion took hold once more. The catfish flicked its fins in annoyance and moved its eye in front of Vel's face once more, flashing that searing blue into his mind and pushing back the fever.
"Why have you come here, broken man?"
Growling, Vel blinked the afterimages out of his vision.
"Does it matter?"
It floated backwards, growing disinterested.
"Not really. You were entertaining for a moment, but perhaps you are just food."
This creature was simply toying with him, like the cat that played with the mouse before devouring it. If the conversation didn't improve, Vel was likely going to have to fight the thing. But how do you do battle with a school of fish? It wasn't a single thing, but rather the combination of millions of tiny fish swimming around a glowing eye. Perhaps that was its center, its weak spot. In his current state, he would still very likely be eaten regardless. But if that was the case, he wouldn't go down without a fight. Not this time. Vel rallied his nerves internally, ignoring the fact that this was such a bad idea.
"I may be just a man, but you don't scare me."
"Oh?"
It moved forward, puffing itself up.
"That is odd and foolish. Why?"
"Because you're not the first eldritch thing I've met. You wouldn't even be the first god I've watched die."
Instinctively, Vel's eyes flicked over to Amy's display, wishing his bravado had just a bit more to back it up. A deafening sound vibrated through the water, forcing him to cover his ears. He realized it was laughing.
"I never said I was a god, you brave, foolish, and broken man."
It swam closer still, almost there.
"Which god did you fell? Was it one of mine?"
Close enough. Vel pushed off the floor of bones, his mechanical hand reaching for the orb. As his fingers made contact, it ignited into a blazing beacon in the dark, and his body froze, locked in place.
"I knew you smelled of the divine, but how odd."
The eye pulsed, and Vel could feel the creature reaching through his touch to invade his body and mind. He struggled to free his hand, but it was a fruitless gesture.
"Ah, you play host to a lesser deity. One of artificial mind that has been enslaved to hold your broken body together. How delightful. And yet, that is not the scent I smell from you."
He could feel it press deeper. The sensation was oddly euphoric, like Vel was being hugged with a blanket straight from the dryer. It soothed his soul, and he wanted to give in, to tell it his secrets. He'd give it anything it wanted.
There, trapped, held prisoner behind a wall of zeros and ones, a sliver of something true, something old.
Another croaking laugh.
Let's have a conversation, shall we?
Amy's interface glitched, and the warm feeling ripped free from his body. But something else took its place. Mel shuddered, his eyes rolling back in his head. And then his voice spoke of its own accord.
I live?
The catfish bristled with excitement, tiny fish darting in and out.
Hello, tiny one. Who are you?
Mel's face contorted in confusion, then anger.
Tiny? Show me respect, fish. I am Alpha, first of my kind.
The first revenant? You are one of mine. Or at least, what is left. Pity.
You dare!
Vel's fingers trembled, attempting to tear the eye free, even through his paralysis.
I am a god!
No, little thing. You are barely a speck, an insignificant echo hidden away by the twisted remnants of Ravaria's leftover shade, the piece of her that could not be reunited in the seed. You are merely a piece of a piece of a piece, planted inside a broken pot. The one they call Amy is more of a god than you.
Ravaria. I know that name.
Vel's eyes locked onto the orb, boring into it.
Release me now, fish, lest you feel my wrath.
Insolent pup! You would threaten one of the ancient!
The orb pulsed, and the tiny fish that made up the body of the god scattered. All that remained was the glowing sphere, propped up on a long shaft that disappeared into the bones beneath them. There was a rumble, bubbles rising from the watery graveyard, sending up a plume of silt. In every direction, the bones and discarded carapaces of long-forgotten meals were cast aside as something massive began to pull itself free. Something long and slender, covered in shimmering scales, started to climb out of the depths of the cavernous black. The glowing orb, that massive eye, was but a tiny flashing lure on a head that continued to rise. Its own eyes were the size of hills, with teeth as long as buildings, and a flashing red mane that ran the length of its back. Vel was staring at the large, impossibly ginormous body of a twisted oarfish, but it held itself like an eel, glowering at him with a wicked smile.
What use is wrath against hunger?
Vel's body stumbled under Alpha's control as they tried to remain upright on the never-ending, sinuous body that he had thought was the cenote's floor. They shot a look of contempt up at the creature.
I stand by my threat. Release me from this prison of flesh.
The oarfish relaxed into a gentle curve, a smile pulling at its maw.
Such ambition. Outside of this broken pot, you would cease to exist. But perhaps, with the proper nurturing, you could grow to be something worthy.
The cavern shook with its laughter once more before it began to sink back into the depths.
Very well. Go, become a god worth eating, and then return to me and make good on your threat.
Dozens of glowing orbs, just like the first, began to ignite between the frills of its mane.
I do get ever so hungry down here.
Alpha was slammed back into the prison of Amy's circuitry, and Vel's awareness snapped to the front, the impact like running into a brick wall. His head throbbed, and he felt like he had been ripped free from a vivid daydream. But before he could even get his bearings, the water around him churned to life. Bubbles exploded from beneath him, and his lungs began to burn with the need for oxygen. He thrashed, grasping for the surface that he knew was too far away to reach in time. He thrust out with his mechanical hand, scooping at the water, when Vel felt something latch onto it, and for the briefest of moments, he was certain the creature had returned to devour him. Seconds later, he was hauled from the water and back onto the dugout. He coughed, hacked, and vomited water onto the basin of the canoe.
And that is why you do not lean out of the boat.
He glanced up. The dryad had pulled him free from the water and was glowering at him with annoyance. He wheezed several times, mumbling his thanks, and collapsed onto his back in the boat.
Stop acting like you are drowning. You barely got wet.
Undine scolded, shaking her head at him as she pushed her oar into the water.
You better hope we can catch up to the queen.
As he stared up at the ceiling dotted with glowworms, her words mulled around in Vel's brain. He had barely gotten wet? It felt like he had been down there for ages. Was none of that real? Had he concocted the whole ordeal in his delirium? He lifted his left hand, placing it against his own forehead. He found his fever gone and his skin cool to the touch.
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
Jeffrey? Jeffrey! I have need of you!
Of course, ma'am. How may I be of service?
Oh, there you are. I'm afraid I have forgotten my spare hanky back on the ship. Be a dear and fetch it for me, will you?
But, ma'am, the ship burned down.
Yes, and?
And so your hanky is likely naught but ash, ma'am.
Do you know that for certain? No, you don't. So go back and shift through the rubble until you find proof to the contrary. It is very precious to me, and I can't go on without it.
And what of the dragon, ma'am?
What of it? You've disciplined my hounds before, haven't you? Just give it a good whack on the nose and tell it to be good.
No!
Excuse me?
No! My mate said it would drive me insane working for you maniacs. And you know what? He was right.
What happened to your accent?
Stop it, you balmy old cow. I quit.
Why, I never...
Heck with a lot of you. I'm leaving. Oh, crikey.
I do believe he forgot about the dragon.
Apparently.
Oh, son of a... Oh, no.
Any chance I can have my job back?